This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode and last episode of Second Look of the Year. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Rachel Deerfield. Today we'll be discussing ISU's new police dog, Professor Korg, new housing developments in Bloomington Normal, and ISU sports highlights. The State Farm building in downtown Bloomington is set to be transformed into a $68 million housing project. There is also an additional housing project led by Holiday Properties on East Empire Street that will be turned into apartments. WZND's Courtney Conroy spoke to Ellen Robertson, the Economic Development Manager for the City of Bloomington.
Would you mind telling me a little bit about yourself and your position in the City of Bloomington?
Sure. I came to the City of Bloomington in February of 2022 as the Senior Economic Development Specialist. And since then, I've been working here. I worked under Melissa Hahn, initially focusing on economic development. We got into housing, focused a lot on the incentive process, applications, analysis, review, and putting all of the agreements together, managing them on the back end as well. Back in November, when we split departments, I was then promoted to Economic Development Manager under Kelly Pfeiffer, and then continued to do what I did in my previous role, a few additional responsibilities, trying to manage economic development, looking at our strategic planning like that for the city.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. So, do want to dial a little bit into the housing shortage with our conversation today, and kind of in correlation to that press release we had received earlier this week on the State Farm building, the proposal that obviously had passed on Monday. I just wanted to ask, how did that proposal go? Were you in attendance for that?
I was. It went very well. So much better than we anticipated. I mean, we always hope for a unanimous decision on all of our proposals, but really there was a lot of celebration around it. It's been a project that's been in the work for a very long time, and a lot of things went into it, part of it being the downtown TIF that we implemented for the full downtown, but a lot of that also was for this project in order to make it work financially. So there was a lot of time, effort, resources out into this, and as well as the holiday project, and we're just very excited that it went down. There weren't a lot of questions. There was a lot of public support, which we greatly and always appreciate. And it's very important for the project and the process. So we couldn't have been more thrilled with how Monday night went for UEP and the holiday project.
Right. I mean, this is huge news for not only Bloomington, but I'd say the Twin Cities in general with how much housing this is going to provide. And it's, to my understanding, there's two different projects, correct? There's the State Farm building, and then there was the Holiday Company that's working on another apartment complex.
That's correct. Yep, the UEP, or the Urban Equity Properties project, is the downtown State Farm building. And then there's a Holiday Properties, which is seven apartment buildings over on Empire Street between Towanda and Veterans. So there's a large flat piece of land right there, kind of by the Towanda Plaza area, that they'll be redeveloping and putting in some new apartments there. So we're very excited about how that's going to transform that area as well.
That's great. So with these two, you know, huge projects underway, what does this look like for the housing shortage in Bloomington Normal?
I mean, every little bit helps, and these are big bits, so we're very excited. As you probably are aware, the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council did a housing study a couple years ago that at that time mentioned that we were about 4,400 housing units short. That number has grown in terms of our housing needs based on the success of our businesses here that have continued to grow as well, that we've needed additional workforce. So we don't know the exact number of housing that's necessary, but this is going to be a really big step into kind of getting that started as well. So we know that there's been kind of a slump in development, just issues with the development process and financing over the last couple of years that have kind of put a hold on a number of projects. So these two are also not just with how many units they're bringing online, but also we're hoping going to be a catalyst for getting additional projects to start the process again. And obviously with these two coming forward and being approved, there's support for additional housing, and hopefully additional developers are looking at that and seeing that this is a good place to do housing development.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that slump and how it's been these past few years. Do you feel like that slump is kind of coming from, like, the company giants Rivian and Ferrero expanding?
The slump, I think, came from a lot of the interest rates, but that need for additional workforce housing, I would say yes, definitely came from Ferrero expanding and Rivian expanding. I know State Farm has been looking to bring people back into the area as well. We've had a lot of smaller businesses as well that have been expanding in the Bloomington-Normal area. It's great news for the businesses and for the economic development of the area, but again, that workforce struggle. Where is everyone going to live? I'm sure you've heard Patrick, from the EDC, president of the EDC, mention that we have about a 50-minute drive, or like a 50-mile, hour-and-a-half drive trade or workforce, they call it shed. So we have people essentially driving from, like, the Chicagoland area, from Peoria, from Champaign, from all these areas to come and work in our area at these companies, especially Rivian. And so being able to provide housing for them in the area is not only going to bring some of those people here to spend their dollars in our area, you know, shop at our grocery stores, go to our restaurants, things like that. But it will also open the door for additional labor to come in, our workforce to come in, because not everybody who's driving is going to want to move to Bloomington Normal. We're very aware of that. But it would open up additional opportunities for, like, new businesses to come in or current businesses to continue to expand here in Bloomington Normal.
Right. And my final question for you today is, obviously, with the elections just wrapping up and Dan Brady step into office, do you feel like his recent electoral status plays into any of these changes? Like, now that he's in office, he's made, like, the housing shortage the top priority. Do you feel like because he stepped into office, these projects are now launching because of him?
So he doesn't come into office until May. We're excited about him coming into office and kind of seeing what his plans are going to be, what his visions are going to be for economic development and for housing. But in terms of these two specific projects, so the Urban Equities acquired the property back in 2019 and has had loose conversations with the city in terms of what they'd be able to put in there. And then in 2023 is when we really started having those serious conversations about making this project a reality. And then the Holiday project as well, they first came to Bloomington Normal, I believe January of 2023, and then took a few months to find the site. And then we had those serious conversations of what is this project going to look like and how can we make it work. So projects have been years in the making. So we're hopeful that Dan coming in will provide a good plan and a vision for the future, and that could bring additional development to the area, but these projects were definitely years in the making.
Do you feel like there's anything that you'd like to add before we wrap things up?
Let's see. We're, again, very excited. So the downtown with Urban Equities, they're going to probably bring in 183 units, so maybe 200 people into the downtown. It's really going to push businesses in the downtown. Adding in a few food courts, an additional restaurant, you know, it's really going to be something that can revitalize more of the downtown in addition to the streetscape that's already going on, all of the downtown events we already have going on, the farmers market that we already have going on. It's really just going to complement the area and kind of bring additional life into the downtown. So we're super excited about that. And then for that Holiday property, as I mentioned earlier, it's really going to change the look of that area from a flat overgrown piece of property into this new bustling area, 210 apartment units from studio to three bedroom. It's really just going to bring a lot of life to that area. And there's additional properties in both the downtown and that Towanda Veterans Empire area that we're looking to have additional development on. So we're really hoping these as well will be kind of that development that begets additional development that will just kind of be that catalyst for the city just kind of booming out after this. So
these two housing projects are expected to solve the housing shortage in the Bloomington Normal area.
ISU's Student Government Association held its first Redbird Market event on Tuesday. Items such as clothing and art canvases were available for students at tables scattered throughout the quad. WZND's Caitlin Wittes spoke to SGA President Tyler Baver about the importance and took a behind-the-scenes look at the event.
My first question is, what inspired the Redbird Market event?
Yeah, so it's actually one of my friends that kind of showed a TikTok about a similar university across the U.S. putting on something. I don't remember which university, but yeah, it was late December. She showed me that. I was like, you're part of SGA, Tyler. You should put something on like this. Yeah, I kind of figured it out from there.
And then what went into planning the event?
Definitely way much more than you'd probably think. It probably was almost around 2 months worth of planning. We had about 4 to 5 meetings with different administrators across campus to see even if it was even legally possible or allowed to do something like this on campus, including me with our general counsel team, people regarding the dean's office, et cetera, et cetera. On top of there, we had to make sure we had room reservations in not only the quad, but both student centers and rain location. It was just really a team of me and one other person, Ella Sharp. So we had to also put marketing to get the vendors and then marketing for the event. And we needed approval of a budget from student government to spend on it. So there's a bunch of other stuff I'm missing between there, but a lot of work for just 2 people.
What's your role in the event?
Yeah, so I was the co-event coordinator. It was between me and Ella Sharp. We were both members of student government, so we kind of took on this role on top of being in student government and on top of being a student.
And then why is it important to support student businesses?
That's definitely a huge thing because it builds community. Students here, we're not very rich, you know, so anything that we can do to support students, so student government bared all the costs for everything, so students would not need to pay to be a vendor. Then if you go to thrift markets and you're a vendor, you need to pay some sort of fee. If you're selling on like Etsy or some other online shop, you have to pay a shipping fee in some sorts. This was completely free for students to set up on their business. I spoke to a lot of students yesterday. Some have never even sold before, and they're like, this is awesome that it's got me interested into selling more. People actually care about my product. People want to buy my product. So supporting Redbirds in any sort of way possible, it's like supporting a neighbor, supporting a friend. So anything I can do to make their lives better and make them support their business.
And then what was the overall goal of the event?
The overall goal, this was almost a trial run for us. A lot of people, including university administrators and staff and students and student government, were kind of watching what would happen here because we didn't know how this was going to turn out. I didn't know till 11 a.m. that day if people were going to even show up, including the vendors or the students that were going to be shopping. So we wanted to see if an event like this could really be put on almost yearly. And I feel like what happened yesterday, it definitely could prove that this could be a yearly event. It could be very successful.
How was the outcome? Was there a big turnout? A lot of vendors?
Yeah, it was a huge turnout, much more than we expected. I can say originally when me and Ella were first planning this event early this semester, we expected only 40 vendors to sign up. We got well over 100 vendors to sign up. It was an amazing turnout. All the vendors, for the most part, came and showed up at some point during the four-hour period. Probably thousands of students came walking through, whether they saw my email to the whole student body or they saw our advertisements around campus, or they were just exiting class and just saw our event coming. So they decided to visit. So yeah, definitely a great turnout. I've only gotten good feedback from our vendors and only gotten good feedback from our students.
Do you have any other information that you think would be important to share?
No, not really. I just hope that we can have an event like this next year. Again, I'm graduating, so is Ella Sharp, my co-event coordinator. So we hope that student government and the next administration will put something on just like this, hopefully even bigger.
SGA reported a good turnout in its first event, and it hopes to host every semester for students. We're going to take a quick break, but we've got some great stories you don't want to miss. Keep it here on 103.3 WZND, a second look.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we've talked about two new housing developments around Bloomington Normal and ISU Student Government Association's first ever Redbird Market event.
Last week, the ISU PD announced a new therapy dog has been introduced to the campus. Possifer Korg will take over after the passing of Sage last fall. Korg will provide resources to students when they are going through emotional distress or just need a friend. Caitlin Wittes from the WZND newsroom talked with ISU Police Department Sergeant Michael Gardner about the importance of Korg will bring to the university.
So my first question for you is, what is Professor Korg's job and why is it important?
Professor Korg's job is simply to make people smile. He helps people get through stressful moments, traumatized moments, things like that. And he really does a great job at helping people find the happiness. He loves, and he just wants to be loved. That's what he does. It's important to campus because so many people can relate to an animal because of pets that they might have at home or just because, you know, the love and energy that animals bring. And a lot of students are leaving their pets for the first time when they come here. And so CORG is here to help welcome them, and not to replace their pets, but to be sort of a stand-in surrogate as they miss their own animals.
And then how do you select the right dog for the job?
Well, a lot of the selection is done by the facility we get the dog from, which is called SIT, and it's down in Southern Illinois. It's supporting individuals through teamwork, and it's a great facility. They train a lot of dogs, and they know what we're looking for, so they know that we're looking for a dog that's well-tempered, that is able to follow commands, that's not going to scare people, doesn't bark excessively, those kind of things. And so they actually do most of the selecting for us, and they say, this is the dog for you.
Very nice. And how does the training process work?
They do all of the training. So the animal spends about 1,250 hours. So pretty much the first year and a half of their life or somewhere after they, you know, they're not a little puppy anymore. And they train for a specific thing. Korg's a therapy dog. And he does deep pressure therapy kind of things. Then the trainers, once the animal is selected for a specific department, they come up to us. And they will train us because he's a facility dog. So that means he doesn't have one handler. There's multiple handlers, and we can all make the choice if we want to be a handler. And so I think this time around we had about 15 people, which is roughly half of our department, that signed up to be handlers, and they train us how to handle CORG.
Nice. And what inspired the Paw Officer program?
It was actually a vision from our chief, Chief Aaron Woodruff. I said the thing about students missing their own animals, and that was certainly part of it. Also, because it's a facility dog, there's benefit to having that animal in the department to help us feel less stressed. Not just officers, but anybody that works in our department. That, in combination with how other departments across the country have been using therapy dogs, meaning if someone experienced a traumatic event and they came in and they were wanting to report it, and if they thought that a therapy dog could help, you could offer that service. And it would like immediately changed the response that we were getting from people, and you know, they could feel more calm and less stressed and then get through that stressful moment. And so those are the main reasons why we want to do that. And I do want to share this little brag that we were the first university in the state to have a therapy dog program, and now there are several that have followed our footprint, and we've also helped many municipalities start therapy dog programs.
Very nice. And then do you have any other information you think would be important to share?
You can come see CORG. If you don't see him around campus, you can actually come to the PD. He lives at the police department. If he's not out, he's probably there if it's during, you know, regular business hours, like between 9 and 5. And you can spend 5 minutes with him in the lobby if you wanted to. CORG's here for the whole camp. If he can help someone get some darker, some stressful moments, we're here to help you.
CORG will look to add the extra support for anyone who asks for it when it comes to mental health. Additional information on this story can be found on WZND.com under the news tab. Let's take a quick rundown of some of the newscast stories we haven't talked about this week. The Trump administration has revoked the visas of several international students across Illinois, including ISU and UIUC. This action is part of the administration's larger goals of limiting immigration, specifically targeting students who have voiced disagreement with U.S. foreign policy. The universities themselves are also facing criticism for refusing to disclose the number of students losing visas.
This Friday, Illinois State University is set to hold a ribbon-cutting ceremony alongside the Illinois Department of Child and Family Services, making ISU one of four regional training facilities for child and family services. The four-year, $2.1 million grant was finalized in June 2024 following months of construction. The Child Protection Training Academy utilizes professional actors, skilled facilitators, and volunteer medical and legal experts to serve as an experimental learning center.
Andy Zilch from the Bloomington Bison has been named president of the team going forward. Zilch previously worked as the communications director and play-by-play commentator for Flow Sports. Additionally, he carries 14 years of experience within the East Coast Hockey League, working for teams such as the San Diego Gulls, Uteca Comets, and Springfield Falcons outside of the Bison.
This Monday, Congressman Eric Sorensen is set to speak on a bipartisan bill to support local law enforcement across the country. he will discuss the reintroduction of the Investment to Protect Act, which is a bipartisan bill to support small and mid-sized police departments. The act helps with increased federal funding to recruit, train, and retain law enforcement officers.
The Children's Discovery Museum is continuing their sensory nights as Autism Acceptance Month continues. Every third Thursday of the month from 3 to 8 p.m., the museum modifies their exhibit environment by making it more welcoming for families with disabilities and sensory sensitivities. Attendees can grab sensory bags at the front desk, which includes noise-canceling headphones, light-reducing glasses, and fidget toys. These are also quiet spaces throughout the museum. Let's take a rundown of some of the Redbird and high school sports we haven't covered so far. The women's golf team swung themselves back for back-to-back MVC Conference Championships. The teams record a score of 874 throughout the tournament. Three Redbirds brought home the hardware, with Jin Young Yoon being named MVC Player of the Year, Morgan Jones as MVC Newcomer of the Year, and Elise Fennell bringing the MVC Freshman of the Year. The team heads to the NCAA Regionals on April 23rd. The women's tennis team got the win 5-2 over Belmont, and the team swept the Bruins in doubles and will face against the Drake Bulldogs in the MVC tournament. The men's team, however, did not have the same luck as the women's, and they were swept 5-0 in their trip to Denver University.
ISU Track and Field is heading to Champaign to face the Illini on Saturday with a to-be-determined start time as they continue their outdoor season. On May 2nd, Track and Field will host At Home, with this meet being Senior Spotlight before going to MVC Championships in Carbondale, Illinois. The baseball team faced Bradley on Friday, where Thomas Harper took the mound for the Redbirds, going three innings, giving up two hits, two walks, and an earned run. Graham Mastros had a day with a home run and a double. Daniel Pasella also hit a home run but those were not enough for the Redbirds as they fell 6-5. On Saturday was a doubleheader, with Game 1 having an explosive offense for Illinois State, with Pasella, Judah Morris, and Braden Bakes earning themselves home runs. The Redbirds rallied in the eighth inning, tying the game, which led to extras, but ended in a 14-13 loss. Game 2, Tyrell Chadwick started for Illinois State, going 5.2 innings, giving up 9 hits, 2 walks, and 3 earned runs. Pasella earned himself his third home run of the weekend, while Morris and Luke Stolga got doubles. Ultimately, this was not enough, and the Redbirds got swept by the Braves with a final score of 7-5.
Switching over to softball, the team took down their first two games of the three-game series this weekend against Missouri State. In Thursday's game against the Bears, the team racked up 15 total hits and took an 8-4 win. This electric momentum carried over into Friday's doubleheader, where Game 2 saw Bella Atkinson hit her first home run in a Redbird uniform to give the team a 6-2 win. In the series finale, the team lost 8-2. Following the conclusion of the series, WZND's Kayshen Shingothi caught up with Game 2 starter Paige McLeod, who tossed all 7 innings and struck out 6.
So, you pitched Game 1, you pitched really, really well. You had your strikeout pitch working today. What do you think allowed you to find your strikeout pitch, which I know isn't really a big part of your game, but you looked really strong in today?
Yeah, it's not really a big part of my game, but when it does come, we really utilize it. But really, just like my defense behind me and knowing that I can approach that batter with extreme confidence gave me that ability to stay loose and really move that ball through that zone, which I think enabled me to get more strikeouts than I typically do.
What do you think was your most effective pitch today?
I'd have to say my drop ball. For the most part, kept the ball in the park and kept it on the ground, just trying to give my defense the best opportunity to make outs and keep us in a ball game.
What do you think you saw in Missouri State's lineup that allowed you to kind of take advantage and really start to find that strikeout?
I really started to see the patterns of their swings, and I really started to mix in other pitches to utilize that strikeout pitch to enable us to mix it up and keep them off balance and on their toes, which make the strikeout pitch even more effective.
How important is your defense, even when you have your strikeout stuff, to really keep you grounded and make sure that you're making plays behind you?
My defense is so very important to me. I look for ground balls. I look for weak contact. That is my goal. I'm not going into a game trying to strike everybody out. If the strikeouts come, they come. But I really rely on my defense. and they really have my back, and they pick me up, and they really boost my confidence.
What do you think when you're getting all those strikeouts? How do you keep yourself in the game to make sure that it doesn't start to get away from you and you're able to still get those ground balls a part of your game plan?
I keep myself humble on the mound. I really talk to myself, and I'm just like, one more out, like, keep one pitch at a time. We call it, like, pitching for points, so it's like we're not focused on the results, and we're focused on the process and really executing each pitch so we're not getting wrapped up in the results of the external plays and the external strikeouts or the hits that we give up. We're just really locked in pitch to pitch.
How important is your relationship with your catcher to you?
It's very important. I love Bella. Bella is really, like, a calming presence for me. She really helps me stay locked in, and like when I get two back-to-back hits or anything consecutive, she always comes out and talks to me, and she's just a really like motivating factor. I know she's working hard for me back there, and she did a great job this whole weekend and this season. That bond is like really what helped me keep going.
Able to get the split today. MVC tournament's coming around the corner really, really fast. What are you guys really trying to solidify as you guys get towards the tournament and towards the playoffs?
We're really trying to solidify bringing all three aspects of our game to each game, like our offense, our defense, and our pitching. We're trying to like fine-tune everything. Pitchers can keep our defense in ball games and have our defense keep our offense in ball games, and it's all going to correlate. Our hits or our offense has been really on an uphill, like steady climb right now. So hats off to them. They did a great job this weekend.
How important is it to have Hannah, both Meeks and Meshnick around you to make sure that they're also balancing the load, and just a really effective pitching staff overall?
Yes, we are a really effective pitching staff. I think we each bring something unique and different. Like, we bring different heights and sides of the zone, lefty-righty. Like, I think it's a great mix, and knowing that they want the ball and that they're confident in themselves too, it really helps give, like, us, like, me confidence and each pitcher confidence individually, because we're able to know, like, okay, like, I can go out there and I can do my best, and, like, my other pitchers have my back if I need them.
Now sitting at a Missouri Valley Conference record of 11-8, the team sits in fourth place following a series win over the Bears. The Redbirds will be back in action on Tuesday facing their I-74 rivals in the Bradley Braves.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today, we talked about the ISU's Government Association first ever Redbird Market, Professor Korg's involvement on campus, and ISU sports highlights from this weekend. For Second Look, I'm Rachel Deerfield.
And I'm Jaden Cohn. And this concludes my time here on A Second Look. Going forward, I'm happy to announce Rachel will be your new producer for next year. Have a great week, and we will make sure to join Bella Morello, Colleen Holden, and Lauren Leisure for the last Bird's Eye View episode, where they will take a deep dive into the film industry. Have a great week, everyone, and remember you can listen to this episode or any of our previous ones on WZND.com under the podcast tab.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.